Hi, my name's Courtney Doctor, and I'm the Director of Women's Initiatives at the Gospel Coalition. My friends and I lovingly refer to the women we see once a year at TGCW as our camp friends, because the time we enjoy together at a conference feels just like a week at camp. And I want to encourage you to invite your camp friends, the people you want to sit beside as you listen to great teaching, worship, stay up late chatting about theology and life, and just have fun. And if you don't have camp friends to bring, come and meet some new ones. The final price increase is on May 8th. This is your last chance to save on your registration. Sign up at tgcw24.org. I really hope to see you there. That's tgcw24.org.
Thinking about joining us in Indianapolis for the Gospel Coalition's 2024 Women's Conference? The regular rate price of $239 goes up to $259 on May 8th. This is your final chance to save on your registration. Join us June 20th through the 22nd to feast together on the words of Jesus with keynote messages from Jen Wilkin, Melissa Kruger, David Platt, and more, and featuring worship music led by Shane and Shane. Sign up before the price increases on May 8th at tgcw24.org.
Welcome to Gospel Bound, a podcast from the Gospel Coalition for those searching for resolute hope in an anxious age. I'm your host, Colin Hansen, and each week I'm joined by insightful guests to talk about their written work and how the gospel applies to all of life. Together, we keep looking until we see God working. Wherever you're listening, welcome. I'm glad you're here for today's conversation.
In some of our most tumultuous times, God gives us our greatest thinkers. Consider Augustine writing his City of God during the collapse of the Roman Empire in the 5th century. Or consider C.S. Lewis writing in the middle of the Battle of Britain during the Second World War. And consider Jonathan Edwards writing in the early Enlightenment as colonial America erupted in revival and began to consolidate into what would become a few decades later the United States of America. More than 20 years ago, George Marsden gave us the definitive biography, Jonathan Edwards, A Life. The book released at a formative time for me, just as I was graduating college as a history major and headed to work at Christian History and Biography magazine. Now, almost every book I've written or edited since then has been inspired by Edwards and explicitly credits him. So I owe George Marsden a great deal. You can see why I was excited about the publication of his latest book, An Infinite Fountain of Light, Jonathan Edwards for the 21st Century, published by IVP Academic. Marsden, a professor emeritus at the University of Notre Dame, says we need Edwards' carefully balanced analysis as much today as any other time in nearly three centuries of what he calls, quote, sometimes anarchical or anarchical evangelicalism. Edwards straddled the worlds of Puritan New England and the British Enlightenment, and this combination produces theological richness with contemporary relevance. Marsden summarizes Edwards in ways that capture his unique insight. Marsden writes, "The primary purpose for which the mighty God has created this universe is so that creatures might live in the infinite pleasure of the joy of God's love." And then he writes this, quote, "The greatest beauty that we can perceive is God's redemptive love in Christ," end quote. George Marsden joins me on Gospel Bound to discuss changes in Edwards' studies, Benjamin Franklin, secular moral judgments, and Edwards' greatest sermon, among other subjects. George, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
Let's just start with the title, George. What is the infinite fountain of light?
Well, that's an image that Edwards uses. The image of light is one of his favorite images, and it's often paired with beauty, and with love. That one of his famous sermons, The Divine and Supernatural Light, he emphasizes that conversion experience is recognizing the love of God, that seeing the love of God, which is at the core of the universe. And I've spoken of thinking of the universe in Edwardsian terms as explosion of the Big Bang of God's love, that rather than explaining the universe as a holy, immaterial chance happening that life happens to pop up in. For Edwards, at the core of reality is God's creative action. And that's not just something that happened long ago, that God is constantly interacting with creation. And so the love of God is perceptible if you see the light, and the light of God is seen in the beauty of God's love, centrally in Christ's sacrificial love and the cross.
The central premise of this new book is Jonathan Edwards for the 21st century. You say that he's a man for our times, but how would you say that? He was, of course, a man of the 18th century, a man who had many, many, many wonderful views and also some views that we would find offensive today. How does that cohere with him also being then a man of our times?
Well, yeah, as with all of us, we may have insights about some things, but we're probably dead wrong about a bunch of other things. Yeah. And I think that, you know, as a historian, you come to recognize that. And so with Edwards, there's things that are very much reflections of his time. There are theological views that he has that are that we would find difficult. I mean, for instance, he was a postmillennialist who believed that by the year 2000, he had still pretty much a old chronology, that the millennium would literally start and that it would be a golden age of peace and justice and so forth. And it turns out he was wrong.
Not quite.
It's not that. But that doesn't at all reduce the ways in which his really core theological insights are still relevant today, and really in a way more needed today than ever. So one of the things I try to do in the book is to contrast the Edwardsian view of the universe of this is the universe is an expression of God's love at its essence, and contrast that with the materialistic, human-centered ideals of the 21st century, and see why we need to recapture that kind of vision. And I think Edwards is really good at he sees the issue because he grew up right at the beginning, right after the Scientific Revolution, and he was fascinated by the work of Isaac Newton and the new new science, and in Newton's view, the whole world is connected with each other materially. That when, you know, gravitation, when the moon moves, the tides move, and so forth, everything's connected materially. And for Edwards, everything is connected spiritually in some way, either positively or negatively. But the world is essentially personal. That your relationship to God is the most important kind of relationship. But everything's connected to everything, and that God can be seen, for instance, in the natural world. We all have a sense of beauty of the natural world that we're often taken by. And for Edwards, the natural world is the language of God. It's part of the language of God, and language is not identical with God, but language is a personal expression of God. And so that language of God then points to the love of God ultimately. So if you see a beautiful sunset, or you Edwards like to go out with nature and just contemplate how the beauty of nature ultimately points to the beauty of Christ, because the ultimate beauty is moral beauty. And the ultimate moral beauty is sacrificial love. So we all recognize that if someone rushes into a burning house to save a child, and risks his or her life, we think that's just beautiful, wonderful. And so Christ dying for us is the ultimate beauty. And that beauty, if you recognize it, that's the light. If you have that, and if you see that, then that draws you to it.
You think a divine and supernatural light is Edwards' greatest sermon and the place to start in reading Edwards. Why do you say that?
Well, Edwards is not easy to read. As I say in the book, he, and using C.S. Lewis as a guide, he needs translators. And so I hope to be one of those who does a little bit of translating. But the divine and supernatural light is accessible. But even that's not easy. I had a friend who I said that, or read the book, and we were discussing, and he said, "Boy, that sermon is really difficult." And this is a pastor, an ex-pastor. But if you pay attention to it, you see the wonderful insights of his using the image of light and beauty, and how you're drawn to that beauty. And he's explained, he says, for instance, that if you see a beautiful person, you sometimes are just immediately drawn to that person. And so the love of Christ is like that. If your eyes are open, if you're given the grace of God to see that love, then you'll be drawn to it. Which I think, by the way, is a nice way to help explain the paradox of free will and determinism, that if you're drawn to a beauty, if you see a beauty, you can't help, if you recognize it, you can't help being drawn to it. But on the other hand, it's totally your action. You're not. Hmm. It's not like you're being made to do something you don't want to do. So I find that a very helpful kind of image for understanding Christian experience.
A couple questions just here about historiography, as well as where Jonathan Edwards is situated. What would you say is the biggest change in study of Edwards since you published your biography in 2003? Certainly there continues to be extraordinary interest in Edwards, but what would you say is the biggest change?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I more or less caught a wave in Edwards' studies that when I went to Westminster Seminary back in the 1960s, and at that time Edwards was not all that big thing in that kind of Reformed theological studies. But in the next decades, Edwards began to catch on. And I personally, when I discovered Edwards, it was in graduate school, and I thought, wow, this is really gives a dynamic to Reformed theology. So I was just fascinated by that. And by the time I got a chance to write a biography of Edwards, it happened that scholarly interest in him had led to the publication taking his sermons and so forth that were in script and putting
digitizing, printmaking,
making them available, and so all of a sudden I had all this material that was wonderful. So by that time, Edwards was very big in Reformed circles. I'm not sure what the biggest change. You might know better than I what the biggest change in Edwards' studies is. I just find that it's. For instance, it's a worldwide phenomenon, and say on the Edwards Yale Edwards site digital site. They get hits from all over the world, and there are Edwards centers, I don't know how many places, 10, 12 places in the world where Edwards is studied. So I think just the way in which Edwards has become part of the canon that he has taken for granted serious theology is probably the most important thing.
I think that was going to be my answer, George, was that it's not seen as a novelty anymore, but seen as being a norm. There was still a little bit of the novelty when Ken Menkema came to Trinity and taught a course for me, and I studied with Doug Sweeney as well, Doug, my colleague here at Beeson Divinity School now. But there's not the sense of novelty. He's just almost take it for granted in a good way. I was like, of course we pay attention to what he has to say, or of course he's probably America's greatest theologian. You just didn't hear those things necessarily.
Yeah, right. I mean, you'd say Augustine, Calvin, Edwards, and it doesn't sound like you're. I mean, you're not. Making it. He fits in some ways, not maybe the greatest, but he's right in the
in that canon. Well, related to that, you describe Edwards as gifted even at a young age in reflecting on how modern outlooks fit with ancient theology. Now, I've also heard neo-Calvinism described this way, this modern and orthodox. I'm wondering, was Edwards any kind of theological predecessor or even an inspiration to the Dutch neo-Calvinists of the 19th and 20th centuries?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that they were aware of Edwards, and that's again how Edwards has caught on. That like C.S. Lewis, I don't think C.S. Lewis was really aware of Edwards in any substantial way, because Edwards just wasn't out there for the later 20th century. He was known, but only as sort of a, sinners and ants and angry God kind of picture.
Yeah, it's kind of just a figment of history and sort of an anomaly of that Puritan New England. I didn't think there was a connection, but I knew if anybody knew of a connection, it would have been you.
I've thought about that, and there are, of course, some parallels because they're both in Augustinian tradition, and so they're compatible, and I've thought of things where they say more or less the same thing from a different I think some of the Reformed philosophers have similar kinds of approaches as Edwards.
Right. Of course, you'll know that some of my interest here is related to my work on Tim Keller, who was very much inspired by Edwards and also the neo-Calvinists. And one of the labels that he used to define, or why he resonated with them or why he connected to them, was because of that modern and orthodox outlook. So when I saw that in your book, I thought, I wonder if there's any connection. I didn't think there was, but that there's a common.
A common heritage and seeing some of the same things that speak still to our era.
You know, one of the things I like to do most, George, in his history is just putting timelines up there, and it really blows our minds sometimes. Like if people understood that people like Martin Luther King Jr. were not very different in age from Billy Graham, for example. Doesn't make sense because, of course, King died so long ago. Graham lived so much longer. A similar example would be Jonathan Edwards and Benjamin Franklin. They were contemporaries. Edwards was less than 3 years older than Franklin. You write, this is part of the fascinating application of your work, that you see their differing perspectives still playing out in our world today. How?
Yeah, well, I think Franklin would be just fascinated by the technological advances today. He'd also be very pleased with the ideal of the self-made person. That's an individualism that's encouraged today and in modern civilization. And he'd be disappointed with an awful lot of things about modern civilization and our capabilities for destruction and so forth, and our inability to sort of live together constitutionally as we ought to. Nonetheless, it's sort of his kind of world, but it's essentially a materialistic, human-centered kind of world. Whereas Edwards, very close contemporary, both brought up in Puritan New England, offers this view of the world that is a alternative to that, where the spiritual realities are the most, and personal realities is the most essential thing in the universe, rather than material things are about the most essential thing in the universe. So I've long found that just a fascinating contrast with the two people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. My favorite work of Edwards is The Religious Affections. You say that we could change that title to be A Treatise on Religious Loves, and that might communicate more effectively today.
Yeah.
What difference does that terminology make?
Well, I did think affections is a word that, it's not a strong word. You have affection for your pets,
right.
Which is nice. I mean,
but, not what Edwards was writing about.
but religious loves, that's essential to what our character is. What do you love the most? And what he's saying in religious affections is, if you want to see whether you're serving God, think about what are the things you love the most. And this is a test of how, whether your loves are rightly ordered. And so I think the ideal is, you see the sacrificial love of Christ as kind of the core of God's revelation in the universe, and then you hope your loves ought to be oriented in that direction. They're not going to make it, but you can at least self-examine to hope that's what's going on. So Edwards goes through the kinds of loves that you should have, and ultimately concluding with, do you care about charity? And that's the longest section in the religious affections, is what are you actually doing for the poor? And I quote Tim Keller there, that justification or that justice is a sign of justification, that those two things ought to be connected to each other, that your regard for those who are in need and if you're doing something for them. And that's a good test, and you see it in Edwards. He's very strong emphasizing that kind of practical outcome of what it means to be a Christian.
Just one more question here with George Marsden talking about an infinite fountain of light, Jonathan Edwards for the 21st century. I just wonder, what does reading and writing about Edwards do for you and to you? What's that experience like?
I found it was a wonderful opportunity that I had in mid-career, that one of my former students, Ari Stout, was running the Edwards Center along with another student of mine, Ken Minkema, and Stout said to me, we need someone to write a big biography of Edwards. And I jumped at the chance. And so I spent, half a dozen years or so living with Edwards. And I found that just very edifying. I mean, even though there's things that you don't like, the things you do like are great. And yeah. There's a wonderful integrity about Edwards. There's nothing. He's consistent in his views of things, sometimes over consistent, but nonetheless, I found it just helpful, and I never got tired of it. So I found it helpful personally in my own personal religious understandings and practice.
Well, George, your work has been transformative in my life, many other lives, learned so much from you, so many different subjects. One of the first was Fuller Seminary, but all the way through to Jonathan Edwards and beyond into this book, An Infinite Fountain of Light, Jonathan Edwards for the 21st Century. I hope more people will pick up your book and then ultimately go back to Edwards and have their affections inflamed for Christ. Thanks, George.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Gospel Bound. For more interviews and to sign up for my newsletter, head over to tgc.org/gospelbound. Rate and review Gospel Bound on your favorite podcast platform so others can join the conversation. Until next time, remember, when we're bound to the gospel, we abound in hope.